Everyone, thank you for tuning into the Postmodern Realities podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. It's June 2018, and you're listening to episode 77 of Postmodern Realities, and I'm Melanie Cogdill, managing editor of the Christian Research Journal. On this episode, I'm joined by Kevin Scutt. Kevin is professor of media and communication and associate dean in the School of Arts, Media, and Culture at Trinity Western University, which is a Christian university in Canada. He teaches about media, culture, and technology from a faith-based perspective, and his research focuses on video games and how they intersect with our culture and faith in a number of different ways. He is also the author of the book of Games and God, A Christian Exploration of Video Games, and he does enjoy playing strategy video games as well. This is a special episode of the Postmodern Realities podcast because it's a standalone episode that's not related to any article. But back in 2016, Kevin was last on the podcast and we talked to him about coming back particularly to talk about kids and addiction to video games. So since school is out for the summer, we thought this conversation would be of interest to Christian parents who are wondering about their children's video gaming habits over the long summer break. And in addition, the World Health Organization announced this month that they've included a gaming disorder in their mental health condition classification of diseases. However, not all psychologists agree that gaming disorder is worthy of inclusion in this list of diseases. And so we're going to ask Kevin about video game addiction. So Kevin, it's good to have you on.
It's good to be here.
Well, for Christian parents, and I think not just for Christian parents, but just parents in general, this is always a question that we have. We see, I don't know, is there conflicting research, a lot of research that comes out, at least I've read about in the New York Times, about how detrimental video gaming is, but sometimes some other research comes out and says that it's good. And then I guess, especially with the younger generation, like the iGen, Gen Z, some of the younger kids under 18 that have just grown up with screens, you know, it just seems like if you'd let them, they would be on a video game or online or social media for like 8 hours a day. But I want to step back a little bit and ask if you, since you research video games, how is a particular video game constructed and why do designers construct them a particular way?
Well, I mean, that's a big open-ended question, and there's as many reasons as there are people and companies and all the rest of that. In general, of course, well, the one thing that's common to just about every video game that you're likely to run into is that it's made for profit first and foremost, because people need to make a living off of this stuff. So they're always looking for some way to, you know, bring in revenue and make sure that a game actually achieves that. That having been said, there's lots of different ways of doing that. And there are, you know, occasionally games that are made for nonprofit or artistic reasons, argumentative reasons or whatever. So it really depends on what you're talking about. If you're talking about the standard entertainment fare, though, the kinds of things that you're most likely to run into, then the whole goal is to drive a certain percentage of people to spend money. And the most common kind of game that's out there today is what we would call freemium games or free-to-play games or games like that, where you can install the base game for free and then they find different ways to encourage you to spend money once you're in the game. And what they found very interesting about games like that in the industry is that only a very small percentage of people who download and install and play a free game actually spend any money at all. And of those people, only a small percentage spend a lot of money. And so there is this incentive to grow the user base as large as possible so that you can maximize that small slice that actually pays some money. So a lot of games are built to generate those large crowds and to keep people playing and to get people interested in making the occasional purchase of various things in the game.
So because some game designers want people to spend more time in their game and actually spend money in the game, do they design the game in specific to have addictive qualities to it so that you would want to reach the next level, or you have to beat the boss or whatever you need to do so that you can, you know, master the game?
Yeah. And I don't want to frighten people with this or scare people off, because not all games are the same and not all games are built the same way with the same, you know, method of making money. But a lot of free-to-play games are, in fact, built with some kind of incentive to keep you playing longer than you might have otherwise played, and also to get you to spend money that you wouldn't have otherwise spent. It varies even within the free-to-play space from game to game as to how heavy they go on this and exactly what tactics they employ. But a lot of games will employ techniques and theories that have been learned from behavioral psychological research. You may have heard at some point about experiments with rats or with the famous Pavlov's dog and the conditioning of training animals to behave in a certain way by giving rewards, right? And that's all about how psychological creatures behave and how they act. And researchers found, starting in the 1940s and 1950s, that if you gave rewards in a certain way, that you could really get some amazing results. So, for example, one of the famous experiments was to get rats to press on a pedal in order to release food pellets. And they found that if they changed the way that the food pellets were delivered, that it would change the rat's behavior. So, for example, if the rat got a food pellet every single time it pressed the pedal, then it would, whenever it was hungry, it would wander over, press the pedal, get some food, and then it would sort of keep going. And if it was, you know, consistently three presses for one reward, then that would, you know, that would keep them pretty happy. But if it was a variable number of presses, in other words, sometimes it was one, sometimes it was seven, the next time it was two, the next time it was 15 before you got a pellet, the rats started going nuts, and they would just constantly press the pedal no matter how much food was coming out, because they just didn't know when things were coming next. And that kind of thing was actually a fairly significant discovery in the way people operate, and they've applied the same kind of things to games. So rewards in games are often hidden. If you're playing you know, a game like World of Warcraft, when you're fighting enemies, when they die, they drop what's called loot, weapons or armor or, you know, decorations or something like that. And a lot of this stuff is not very good, but occasionally you get this really good thing. And so you keep playing kind of compulsively, or at least that's the whole hope of the game makers. You keep playing compulsively because you hope that the next time you're going to get that drop with a really amazing thing. It's the same kind of thing that slot machines sort of have.
Yes. As a matter of fact, years ago, I remember reading an article in the Los Angeles Times magazine, which I don't think it has the same incarnation now. This is probably at least 15 years ago. And they talked about how they have employed former video game designers to do the slot machines now, because they know so well how to get people to continue to play as long as possible on the machines. Well, one question I know parents are wondering is there research that shows that kids are more impulsive after they play, in particular, violent video games? What's the effect of playing like first-person shooter video games? Now, parents might not know. It's June 2018. Games are always changing as terms of what people are playing these days. But for example, a first-person shooter game that's out there is called Overwatch. So that one has first-person shooting, and of course, other older games that are well-known like Call of Duty. So do these cause kids to be more impulsive after they play them?
I should preface my remarks by saying I'm not a psychologist. I read the psychological literature because I'm researching games, so I'm aware of some of the stuff that's out there, but I'm not a trained psychologist myself. So just be aware of that as I'm talking through some of this stuff. The research that I've seen is mixed on the presence of violence in games and the kinds of effects that it has on people, whether it's kids or adults or anything. There is a body of research that suggests that after playing violent games, that levels of aggression are at least temporarily increased. But there's also a body of research that strongly questions the usefulness and validity of that research. It's still an open question, and it depends on who you talk to. So if you talk to some scholars, they say, oh, definitely there's proof. And other people say there's definitely not proof. Not that they're necessarily wrong, that that maybe games do cause this, but there's not clear evidence to that fact at this point. It's a very contentious issue in the social sciences right now. So the evidence is a little murky. I think common sense tells us, though, that playing video games of certain kinds, in fact, most video games, is a stressful experience. And that sounds negative, but in fact, a certain amount of stress is actually something that we like as human beings. If we never encounter any challenges or anything like that, we get bored. And I mean, people are familiar with sports, right? I mean, people have been playing soccer and basketball and baseball and whatever for a long time, and we're used to that, and so we don't get too worked up about the fact that people, you know, while they're playing these games, their stress levels go up, they get tense, they get excited, and immediately after a sports game, it's not unusual for someone to be sort of, you know, just sort of jumped up and on adrenaline and really excited and tense and all the rest of that stuff that could translate as aggression in a psychological test, right? And I think it's the same kind of thing with video games. When you're playing a video game that's really intense and there's a lot of action and there's a lot of movement and it's hard to succeed, which is the kind of stuff that we're looking for because we want a challenge when we play a game, that afterwards, for a little while at least, we are a little bit jumped up. We're a little bit more on edge. We're a little bit more energetic. And that's not actually a new thing. It's not an unusual thing. It's definitely there. I certainly feel it. When I play a really intense action game, when I'm done, my blood is pumping, my heart is going, and that's a pretty normal sort of thing. So I would say, yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty clear that, you know, certain kinds of games certainly elevate a kind of aggression. The bigger question is whether it's a long-term effect and whether you have, you know, methods as a parent for dealing with the short-term effects. So deal with each of those just really quickly. Long-term effects, there's not a lot of evidence one way or the other. It may be that playing a steady diet of action games or violent games does have a long-term impact, or it may be that it doesn't. Social scientists don't have a lot of clear evidence on that at this point. There's some preliminary studies, but nothing really clear at this point. In terms of, you know, handling that short-term aggression, though, that's a big deal. And a lot of parents struggle with that. You know, your kid plays a game and they come off and they're just wild, right? Like they're just jumping around and bouncing all over the place. And I think that's not necessarily an indication that the kid should never play a game or a game like that, although maybe sometimes it gets so uncontrollable that that is the response, the appropriate response. But I think frequently, what we need to do as parents is we need to come up with strategies for dealing with it, knowing that, okay, when my kid is done playing Overwatch or Fortnite, I'm sure we'll end up talking about. Okay, so afterwards they have to do some exercise or they have to do some, you know, work in the yard or they have to, you know, go for a walk or something like that just to burn off the excess energy. And that may not be the only way of dealing with it, but thinking through strategies and talking it through with your kid, I think, is actually a really reasonable thing given how games do sort of raise that stress level.
You're listening to the Postmodern Realities Podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. Today's guest is Kevin Scudd, who back in 2013 wrote a feature cover story for us called "Can God Fit Into This Machine? Video Games and Christians, and it's available free online at our website, equip.org, if you'd like to read it. If you'd like to read more relevant articles like this one on video gaming, please subscribe to the journal. A 6-issue subscription is now at a new lower price of $33.50. And to subscribe online, visit equip.org. If you already have a subscription, please consider a gift subscription for your pastor, friend, or family member. And if you share this podcast on your social media accounts, you'll help others be able to find out information on how they can subscribe. We were just talking about impulsive behavior after they play violent video games, but I know parents out there listening are going to want to know, as Christians, should we be playing, in particular, first-person shooters? In other words, is it better for our kids to stick to more puzzly games? Or if you were playing, you know, Mario Kart, you're just racing around, you know, a racetrack. You're not in the first person perspective of, you know, with a machine gun or some other, you know, blaster trying to shoot things, whether they be robots or actual people.
It's a great question. And it gets into a whole bunch of really complicated issues. And I wish I had a simple answer to give, but I don't. So I'll talk through some of the considerations that I've been thinking through over the last few years and some of the things that I've heard from parents and stuff like that. The challenge with dealing with violence in games is that it is both like real life and it is unlike real life at the same time. And that's why it is a challenging thing for us to deal with culturally. There are a lot of gamers who want to say something along the lines of, you know, when I'm playing a shooter game, we all know it's not real. Nobody actually dies. When you start criticizing it like it's real violence, you're totally missing the mark and you totally misunderstand what our experience is. And there's some truth to that argument. The fact is that when a game is fired in a game, no matter how realistic it looks, nobody dies. It's a fact. And that's an impossible thing to deny. And there are a whole bunch of other reasons why, you know, playing violence in a game, even when it looks really gory and bloody, that it's not like real life at all. And there's lots of indication that gamers, when they're playing, realize that. Even kids realize when they're playing these games that on some level they know that it's not real. It's not like real life. And yet at the same time, it is like real life. I mean, if you, you know, a game like Fortnite involves you running around in a field, eliminating other people, and in this case with guns. Well, you know, theoretically, it would be the same game if you were eliminating people with marshmallows instead of guns, right? But most gamers wouldn't play a game like that. Why wouldn't they play a game like that if it's the same result? Well, because the fact is, guns are kind of cool, right? And they have this sort of mystique associated with them, and that kind of image of violence is appealing to many people. In fact, so the point is that it's kind of like real life in that sense. I mean, the image of a gun, we call a gun. The image of a tree, we call a tree. I mean, we don't say there's an image of a tree over there in the game. We say there's a tree. So there's a connection to real life. And at the same time, it's not the same as real life. And this is where it gets tricky. And of course, we have to live in that in between, right? And so that's great as a theory, but then practically as a parent, how do I deal with that? And my answer is that it really depends on your relationship with your kids and judging context. You really have to have a good sense of who your kid is, how they're responding, and what you're seeing there. And every kid is going to be a little bit different that way. I mean, there's a big difference between dealing with your 17-year-old son who's doing this and your 12-year-old daughter. I mean, they're in different stages of life. You know, they're different attitudes, different relationships with their friends. And every family is different. And every child is built differently. Some are more sensitive than others. And so it's not a clear right and wrong here where, you shouldn't ever fire a gun in a game. Or it's all, you know, open season, whatever goes. I think it's based an awful lot on context. So from a Christian perspective, is it okay to shoot guns in games? I would say sometimes yes. and sometimes no. It really depends on what the gamer is getting from it and what they're focused on and what they're enjoying and what they're not enjoying as well.
Well, you mentioned earlier Fortnite, so I do want to bring up that particular game because it's very popular at the moment in 2018. And of course, you know, games cycle and there's different games that are popular at different times. But, you know, two questions. How can parents stay up on every new popular game? And does it matter if kids are actually playing the game or watching people play the game? That's a big new, craze because of the streaming website Twitch, where people can watch others play video games and do other kinds of things on Twitch. But I read a New York Times article about Fortnite several weeks ago, and it mentioned that back in April, 28 million hours of Fortnite were watched on Twitch. That's a lot of hours watching people play video games. And so is there a difference? In other words, you know, watching video games is like watching TV. It's different than you actually, you know, having the, you know, gun in your hand in a first-person shooter game or shooting in any of the games. And so basically, how do Christians, you know, I think Christian parents want to know, can their kids play Fortnite? Is it a bad game? Should they stay away from it? But secondly, how do they evaluate content of games they're unfamiliar with? Because there's so many new ones popping up that become the, you know, hip thing of the moment. You know, a while back, it was League of Legends, which is still going really strong, and other games, you know, Overwatch or whatever it is, du jour.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are great questions. So I'll answer the second one first because I think it's the easier one to do. The good news is that it is easier than ever to learn about the games that your kids are playing, unless they're really into some obscure indie games. And even then, it's amazing. You can pretty much go to YouTube for just about any game and type in Let's Play and then the title of the game that you're looking for, and you will find more videos than you have time for to watch. And even 15 minutes of watching something will give you a sense of what the game is like. Now, I should be clear, it is not the same to watch a game being played as it is to play it yourself. And I do think that if you're really serious about it, and if your kids are playing a lot of a game, you should try it at least a little bit yourself. And yes, you're going to be terrible at it, most likely. I mean, there are a bunch of gamer parents as well, and they're fine. And sometimes people discover they have hidden talents, but you're going to be terrible at it, and that's okay. It shows your kids that you care, and it gives you a unique perspective that you wouldn't have had just by watching it. But the good news is that you can watch hours of footage of just about any game that's out there, and that really gives you a pretty good sense of what the tone of the game is like, what the artwork is like, what the experience is like, what people are focusing on. And I encourage any parent to do that. I mean, 15 minutes is not a big ask, right? Like, that's not a really hard thing to do. So talk to your kids, find out what they're playing, and then go to YouTube and watch some video on it. And once you've done that, talk to them about it, right? Get a sense and watch them play for a little while too, and just see how they play and what they seem to be doing. They'll probably change their behavior when you're standing in the room with them, but that's okay. You get a sense. The bigger question is, are these particular games okay? And so I know the answer before I gave was sort of classic academic vague, you know, maybe yes, maybe no. But what I'm trying to do there is to sort of indicate that it's your job as a parent to really get involved with your kid's life and make a judgment on the basis of your own principles. And so for some parents, when they look at a game with shooting at all, they go, no, that's not something that I want my kid to be playing ever at all. And you have the right to do that as a parent. You have the right to say that. When I look at Fortnite, my wife is a middle school teacher, so she's teaching eighth grade kids, and my kids are in that region as well. And so I just started playing Fortnite last week, actually, and I'm a real noob and not very good at it. But I wanted to play it just so that I would be able to talk about it a little bit. I look at a game like that and I go, I think for a lot of teenagers, young teenagers who are really into this game, I think there's a lot worse stuff out there that they could be getting into, which is not the same thing as saying that it's good or okay. It is a shooting game. I mean, you run around, you shoot a bunch of people, and the last person standing wins the game, right? Or the last team standing or whatever. But it's the same kind of thing. That having been said, The violence is not particularly gory and disturbing. There's a lot of construction and interesting strategy. You can get into some interesting team-based dynamics if you play in the squads. And the overall tone of the thing is very cartoony, very goofy. I mean, one of the big things that's entered into the popular culture about the game is that, you know, people do these little dances, right? And the dances are just goofy. Like, they're just silly, essentially. And the characters are very cartoony. For some people, they may say, well, that's terrible then, because it's selling violence as a cheap, simple thing. And it should be taken seriously. And I suppose that's an argument to make, but I see it as it's about the same as a Saturday morning cartoon. So if you're not comfortable with that, you won't be comfortable with Fortnite. But if you are okay with that, then there are worse games out there. And that's the kind of analysis that you have to do. You have to play the game. You have to talk to your kids. You have to watch them. You have every right as a parent to say, while you're living in my house, you have to follow my rules. And my rules are, you know, 30 minutes or you can't play this game or anything like that. Some parents feel like they can't say things like that to their kids. And I think they can. But I think the best way to handle it is to talk with them and just sit down and go, okay, so are you keeping up with your homework? Are you keeping up with your friends? Are you getting enough sleep? And if some of those things are not happening or you're observing it, then you talk through reasonable, you know, restrictions with your kids and say, okay, so what can we do here? And then see if they can actually follow through on it. And if they can't, then that's an indicator that maybe there's time to cut off a little bit. But if they can, then you've reached a situation where you've taught them how to manage themselves. Because here's the big thing with kids. They're not going to stop playing games. And when they graduate and they go move out of your house, in some cases in their 30s, but, you know, in some cases earlier, they're going to have to manage this themselves. They're adults. And so the training them to think about this stuff and, you know, habits of self-management early is really, really important later on.
I agree with you. I think that we can apply the same thing to watching movies, right? I try to find out why a film is rated a certain thing. And, you know, sometimes we always assume, well, a rated R film is a bad film, but why is it rated R? I mean, Saving Private Ryan is rated R for war violence. Should your kids not see a movie about World War II? I mean, all those things where you have to make those judgments, I think, is one thing that we talk about a lot in Christian apologetics, to have discernment, especially when it comes to Christian worldview. And for me, some of the things that draw the line for me in video games would be, yes, my kid is not allowed to play first-person shooters. And also, I don't want my kid to be playing any kind of video game that is treating women in a bad manner, where some of the video games of the past that were really big, where you would, you know, kidnap women or rape women or something like that, that is just a no-no for us. It's something that we would not do because it doesn't value people. And so I agree with you that to have those kinds of conversations with your kids so that, you know, you can help teach them discernment skills, because you're absolutely right. If you just block everything off from them, they won't know how to manage it. And then they could go to college and move out or start a job and then fail out or not show up to their job because they're gaming 24 hours a day or something like that, just a long period of time. So I also want to ask you, how can Christian parents model appropriate screen behaviors? And I know we all, as parents, are worried about kids, but if we're honest, most of us, if not a good portion of us, have social media on our phones, and we're checking our social media accounts and so forth, even if we're not gaming, but it is screen behaviors. So how should that work? You know, what advice can you give us regarding that? And just like you said, managing interpersonal relationships off screens and things like that.
Yeah, this is the challenge of parenting, right? We like to think about what our kids are doing, and we don't turn the attention on ourselves all the time. And it's the classic, you know, parenting of don't yell at people when you're angry. But what do? You yell at people when you're angry. What do they learn, right? Do they learn what you say, or do they learn what you do? And our technology use is exactly the same way. Now, if you're not a gamer yourself, you may be going, well, what can I teach my kid about gaming? But it is, in fact, as you say, a broader question of technology use in general. How do you handle your digital devices? And we should be examining that all the time. The funny thing when we're talking about violence and we're talking about addiction and things that we find problematic in video games, it's actually not just a kid thing. I mean, I think kids have probably lower levels of self-control, especially as they're moving through that adolescence period than a grown adult does. But honestly, adults struggle with all of this stuff too. I still struggle with this. I'm in my mid 40s and I often play games longer than I should. That's really important. And I think the key for us is that we model the role of digital technology in its proper place. What that means is, I think that there needs to be spaces in our day that are very clearly marked off as digitally free, especially if you're a heavy user. If you're the kind of person that is constantly checking Facebook or Instagram or whatever it is that you use, you need to be able to show your kids that it is possible to live without those things for periods of time. And that you're able to put it away. So, for example, it's not a hard and fast rule at my household, but basically during supper time, we don't have technology interrupt things. Now, there are exceptions. We kind of have a nerdy family, and we talk about a lot of obscure things, and sometimes we go and run and check Wikipedia on things. Which is our sort of fun way of checking up on stuff. And so then life is interrupted by a digital device. But we're definitely not answering, phones or texting or doing social media stuff at the table. And in fact, that whole after school, before bedtime thing, we do manage pretty carefully. There's going to be a limited amount of time on our screen. But I will say that our kids see me and my wife both glued to our laptops for quite a few hours a day. And so it's not really surprising when our kids do the same sort of thing. So I think that it is really important that we pay close attention to the amount and the context in which we engage those technologies.
At our house, the rule is no gaming during the school week or school night, which is basically Sunday through Thursday night. So that's limiting during the school year. So we kind of have that, and then trying to just have a set amount of time, on other days, on the weekends. Okay, you can have this much time on video gaming if you're going to do that. Well, this has been a really fascinating conversation, and I'm sure we'll have to talk to you again at some point, because there's so much more to discuss. I mean, just technology, and especially video gaming and kids, and how to do all those things is really, I know, foremost question that parents have. And I know that there's a lot of good video games out there too that help show empathy and other things that we haven't even explored. So we'll have to talk to you again, Kevin. Finally, I want to end with some fun rapid fire questions for you. So it's summer. Would you rather have ice cream or a smoothie or frozen yogurt?
I'm a huge ice cream guy all the way. Absolutely.
Are you an introvert or extrovert?
Directly in between. If I don't have people, I get bored. If I have too many people, I get tired.
Are you an early bird or a night owl?
I'd like to be an early bird, but no, I definitely am up till one or two most nights.
Wow. And where would you go on vacation if money was no object?
Oh, any number of places in Europe. We're big fans of France, for example. We've been a few times. We love it.
Well, thanks, Kevin, for being a guest on the Postmodern Realities podcast.
Thanks for having me. It's really great. And there's lots of places to continue these conversations. So I encourage you to keep talking and thinking about them.
Well, today's guest, Kevin Scudd, wrote a feature article back in 2013 called Can God Fit in This Machine, Video Games and Christians? It's available free online at our website, equip.org. And to read more thought-provoking articles like his, please subscribe to the journal. A 6-issue subscription is now at a new lower price of $33.50. And to subscribe online, visit equip.org. We'd like to hear from you, so connect with us on social media, like the Bible Answer Man Facebook page, and follow CRI, Christian Research Journal, Hank Hanegraaff, and the Bible Answer Man on Twitter. Follow the Bible Answer Man on Instagram, and please subscribe to the Bible Answer Man channel on YouTube. If you like this episode, please subscribe to the Postmodern Realities podcast on iTunes, And when you rate and review our podcast, it helps others to find our content. So please share this episode on your social media accounts. Be sure you tune in daily to the Bible Answer Man broadcast hosted by CRI President Hank Yanagraff, who answers your questions live on air. To ask Hank a question, call 888-ASK-HANK Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. In addition, head to iTunes and subscribe to Hank Unplugged. It's Hank's new audio podcast. You'll follow Hank off the grid, where he has in-depth conversations with some of the brightest minds discussing topics you care about. So until our next Christian Research Journal author conversation, thanks for listening to the Postmodern Realities Podcast.